and welcome to the Trust Your Body Project. Trust Your Body Project is a podcast and social media movement designed to help you heal, eat, and create space for the things that truly matter. I'm your host, Whitney Catalano. I'm an anti-diet, health at every size registered dietitian, helping you stop dieting, make peace with your body, and take the power back from your inner bully. Welcome to episode number 35. On today's episode, we are talking to Dahlia Kinsey, who is a registered dietitian and school nutrition specialist. She is weight neutral, and she reached out to me, as I will explain at the beginning, just to talk about, you know, intersections of race and gender and weight in the context of health at every size and weight neutral nutrition. She's really passionate about making nutrition simple, fun, and accessible, and she believes in the power of diversity and dialogue about cultural competence and inclusion in dietetics in general. So today we're talking about her experiences becoming a dietitian, her experiences of some of the racist like rhetoric and biases that happen within conversations about health. And just to give you a little bit of sort of background information for anyone who's not a dietitian, one of the things we kind of focus on is the problem of a lack of diversity in the dietetics field. And it's something that is very obvious for a couple different reasons. The first being, you know, this is a situation where becoming a dietitian is incredibly expensive, and you have to be able to go almost a year working for free and actually paying to work. So paying to be in a dietetic internship and not being compensated in order to become a dietitian, which is an enormous privilege. And it's not something that is really feasible. Not only that, but dietitians are, you know, notoriously thin white women. And so it's not the most like welcoming profession to people of color or people in bigger bodies or people of various gender identities or, you know, various abilities or what have you. And I've talked about this in a few different episodes on the podcast before, but I definitely just wanted to talk to her because she has such a unique perspective on her experiences becoming a dietitian and just some of the things that she faced, some of the different conversations that happen about nutrition where that don't really make a lot of sense. And so for the purposes of your understanding, we do talk briefly about there is, you know, a lot of conversations in public health, and I've talked about this before around, you know, why do we take something like prevalence, right? So if you're in a bigger body, you have a risk of developing certain conditions like heart disease and diabetes. Those are like the big ones that everyone talks about. And risk does not mean that you are going to or that it's because of your weight, right? Like it is not a cause and effect thing. It is a statistic, an observation on a big group. And the same thing happens with race and socioeconomic status, right? So one of the things that's talked about frequently is, you know, people in communities of color or people of color tend to have higher rates of disease or higher risks of disease. And then the conversation kind of shifts to, well, you know, it's these poor Black communities who like don't know how to feed themselves and da 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 da. And so Dahlia and I both talk about this a lot. And that's where this sort of line gets drawn where it's like, okay, well, we see prevalence and risk, but we're not using our critical thinking to ask why that is the case. And then the bias comes in of the assumptions around, oh, it's because of X, Y, and Z. Well, what about the way that people are treated? Because that would require a certain level of understanding about, you know, oppression is extremely harmful for the body. And I talk about this with weight as well, that if you are experiencing weight-based oppression for much of your life, you're probably experiencing low-grade to high-grade anxiety for most of your life, right? Like this is going to have a direct impact on your health. And so when we talk about weight putting you at risk of disease, like it's just not that simple. It's not as simple as lose weight. Although, you know, if you are able to successfully quote unquote lose weight, right? Like, yeah, your experiences in the world may be different, but then you've got a whole other host of issues. And not to mention, it's not even, you know, a thing that is possible for most people. So if you're confused about what I'm saying, I have a ton of episodes on that, but I just wanted to give a little bit of background because it is a really interesting conversation that I have with her. And I wanted to make sure that everyone is kind of on the same page with that. And before we get into all of that, welcome back to the break. So I hope you all had a great holiday. One of the things that I talked about on Instagram, so you can definitely go currently see that at Trust Your Body Project. I also talked about it in my membership site, Club TYB, is we are talking about New Year's intentions. So what kind of intentions are you setting as opposed to resolutions? And one thing that I talked about extensively in Club TYB is how to navigate resolution talk. So if that's something you're interested in, this podcast is actually brought to you by Club TYB. So Club TYB is my membership site. It's a place for you to heal your relationship with food and continue on this journey. I like to call your online food freedom family. And every month we do a live call with me where I talk about a specific topic. So last month was all about, you know, New Year's intentions. And then I also do a guest call with someone. So last month I talked to Julie Duffy Dillon, who specializes. I did an episode with her, but we went even deeper, which was awesome. Talked about PCOS and food freedom and why it's not a good idea to diet if you have PCOS and what to do instead. So if that is something you're interested in, head on over to whitneycatalano.com/club-TYB. If you join for 6 months, which is a really, really good deal. Honestly, it's less than $16 a month. The normal price is $19 a month, but if you join for 6 months, you get 1 month free, so you get a discount, and you get an entire mini course for free that is normally a $49 course. You get it for free, and it is going to teach you everything you need to know to start healing your relationship with food. So it's all about emotional eating, binge eating, breaking the binge cycle, health at every size, how to start processing your emotions, how to start thinking about food freedom with a long-term mindset, and just, you know, a lot of the nitty-gritty and the questions that I get asked, it covers everything. So if you are looking for a place to get started, Club TYB is definitely the answer, and I will be in the group supporting you and loving on you, and everyone else in there is so awesome. People are so amazing at responding to each other, and yeah, this is just like what a cool way to start out 2020 is with the intention of healing. So whitneycatalano.com/club-TYB if you want to join. We only have a couple episodes left before I take a break to write my book. So joining Club TYB is also a great place to get to know me and hang out with me while I'm writing my book, because I will be taking a break from the podcast, which makes me very, very sad, but also is much needed. I have too much on my plate right now, but I am currently taking on new clients. So if you are interested in starting off the new year by just like honestly committing and going for it, like healing your relationship with food, and you know, literally in 6 months, you will be in such a different place. Like, you won't even recognize yourself. That is the number one thing I hear from my clients, is that they can't even believe how quickly they are able to heal and make huge progress and changes in their lives, to be able to start focusing on the things that really matter and not thinking about food so much. They're able to spend time with their friends and families and wear clothes that make them feel good and, you know, go out and do things. And more importantly, they have that peace in their mind. So they really get the sense of clarity and compassion for themselves, and learn how to quiet that shame voice. Because that is one thing that I really specialize in, is helping you navigate that shame voice, so you're not at the mercy of it all the time. You have the power here. So I'm helping you take back the power. And that, what you learn from healing your relationship with food, will quite literally impact every single area of your life. And you can use these tools for years to come in other areas. Something I talk about all the time is that my relationship with food ended up showing up in my relationship with working and in my relationship with, you know, relationships, like romantic relationships, and it, with everything, really. And so I'm able to use the tools that I developed to apply them to other areas of my life, and I teach my clients to do the same. So if that's something you're interested in, I would love to work with you. I am taking on a few more clients. I have like probably 3 or 4 more client spots open, maybe a fifth. I'm finishing up with everyone right now, starting the new year with a bunch of clients, which I'm really sad about. So I do have a few spots open. whitneycatalano.com/book to apply. whitneycatalano.com/book. All right. And without further ado, just a reminder that this podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is not a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice. And let's get into it. I can't really think of anything else I got to cover. So, okay, then, here's Dahlia. So today we are talking to Dahlia Kinsey, who is a weight neutral registered dietitian and school nutrition specialist on a mission to make nutrition simple, accessible, and fun. The reason why I wanted to talk to Dahlia today is because, well, technically you reached out to me because I had posted on social media that I want to start talking more about the intersection of race and weight and, you know, just talking about intersections in general. I have a little bit, but just not nearly what I want to. And you emailed me and you were like, I've got a lot. Let's talk about them. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited that people are starting to have this conversation because this was not a thing when I was growing up.
Yeah. I mean, me neither. And it's still in certain groups. I think it's a thing now because I am in a bubble, but then, right. You know, you meet people and you're like, oh my gosh, it's still kind of not a thing sometimes. So the more right. that we talk about it, the better.
Yeah, it's true. It really depends on what part of the country you're in and who you surround yourself with. And thanks to social media, you can put yourself in a bubble. Mm-hmm. And every now and then you can't escape it. So it must be strange for people who are non-racist and white for you to think, oh, everybody's over that. And then you like go hang out with someone who reminds you, oh, it's still a thing. But for me, I'll be going about my business, just trying to live my life. And then something ugly will like, you know, jump out at me in conversation. Maybe it's something that's unintentionally racist or maybe something that's overtly hostile or racist, because that happens too sometimes. I am living in the South, but I honestly feel very comfortable in my town and the surrounding towns and the town that I was raised in. But there are some areas where I still don't really want to have to drive there in the late evening, and I would hate to break down in certain states or even be stopped by the police in certain areas. Like, it's on an average day, I feel pretty safe, but there are plenty of times where I feel like I'm not welcome or at home in my own country based on comments that people will make that I know they would not make to me if I wasn't a woman of color. And that just gets to be a drag. So I understand that everybody has problems because this is something that has come up too. Some people get defensive when you talk about privilege and they think that people are insinuating that they don't have any problems and life is just, you know, a cakewalk and everything is handed to them. No, everybody has problems. But imagine on top of that, even when you are at home, people say things to you like, go back to someplace you have never been. I technically have visited Africa, but it was a visit. It was a cruise. I am not from there. So yeah. For me to have the possibility of somebody yelling that at me, for that to have been something that was said to me by a teacher when I was in elementary school. I mean, it's like you have your regular life problems. And then on top of that, a layer of nonsense when you're literally just trying to mind your own business yeah. and live your life, just the microaggressions get super annoying and taxing and it's very draining. And it even has health consequences too. Mm-hmm. Imagine just that chronic low-grade stress that never goes away because you're like, well, when is it going to happen again? When is the next uncomfortable comment going to be made? Am I going to let it ride? Am I going to need to say something? Will I be viewed as a troublemaker if I say it's a problem? It's just a lot of stress. And women know how it is. Like, mm-hmm. think about anytime you've been in an environment where you felt like it was your gender wasn't really welcome. You always had to prove that you belonged there. You had to question yourself when you wanted to say something made you uncomfortable. It's really the same thing. There are so many different ways that humans make other humans feel like trash on a daily basis. So yeah. Just because you're enjoying privilege in one area absolutely doesn't mean you're enjoying all the privilege.
Right. There were so many places that my mind was going to respond, but then I was like, okay, let's start with your background first. And then so how you became a dietitian, I know that you wanted to talk more about like the microaggressions you faced becoming a dietitian. So tell me about that.
So I, at first, like a lot of dietitians, didn't even realize it was a career option. Nobody mentions it when you're somebody was like, oh, you like health, you should do that. They were probably thinking you'll count calories. I'm like, you'll tell people to eat vegetables, it's gonna be so easy. But everyone who is a dietitian knows that's not how that works. Mm-hmm. And there's medical biochemistry and there's all kinds of chemistry and sciences. So it is a challenging field of study, but I really like science and I still was into it even when I got to the coursework. But the lame thing was I live in Atlanta, kind of the Atlanta area. I went to school at Georgia State, which is like smack dab in the middle of the city. And when you look at their marketing materials and stuff, it's all about diversity. And they use all the catch terms and, you know, oh, we're urban, we're this, we're that. And you look at the photos and you're like, oh, great. Everybody's going to be there. Everybody. We're just going to be one big happy human family. It's going to be fabulous. So I get there. I do my first 2 years. Everything is as advertised. Mm. And then I start the core of my program and I go into my first class and I literally felt like, where did everybody go? Like, what happened? What's going on in here? Like, the diversity was out the window. And that could have been fine because who needs to necessarily be around people who look like them all the time? Just because somebody looks like you doesn't mean you have anything in common. And I will say too, I love all kinds of diversity. So in other parts of the school, you were interacting with people from all over the world, literally. But then in the program, it was just very homogenous. People were similar weight, similar ethnic background, similar socioeconomic status, just like all of a sudden, all the diversity was gone. And even in that environment, there was still a possibility that diversity could have been celebrated, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And anytime, well, perfect example, I felt like I was paying to be insulted every day. So in lots of different classes, it would come up like, Black Americans are suffering from obesity. I think it's a lack of education. And what you basically keep hearing over and over again, Black people are too stupid to even feed themselves. That's what I heard. That wasn't what was said, but that's how I heard it.
I heard that too.
And then I could see from other people. So our program, the core of the program probably had like 30 women in it. And there was one Afro-Latina lady who self-identified as Black. People in the program told her she was not Black, people who were not of color. And I'm like, that's not a thing, y'all. That's not a thing. And then there was one lady who was from, I want to say Guyana, but like nobody was the same type of, we were all from different cultural groups and we all self-identified as Black, but there was only four of us.
Right.
And none of us had anything in common, which was funny because when all these blanket statements were being made about Black people and we would say, hey, just a reminder, that is a very broad term and nothing you're saying can possibly have any foundation. And in fact, because what are the common characteristics here? That would be like saying, oh, people with blue eyes, I mean, they tend to struggle. They tend to be low income. How? Like, what does blue eyes have to do with anything? Like, what else is that connected to? It's one physical characteristic. Why are we sitting here in a program that we're saying is evidence-based, making these ridiculous statements that if you even lift like a finger as far as critical thinking skills go, this makes no sense. Why do you keep saying this? And then there are people of color in the classroom trying to tell you, hey, this is making no sense to me. And you silence them.
Mm-hmm.
It was just bananas. And for the other woman of color was from Jamaica. And even though I have some Jamaican ancestry and some Cuban ancestry, she was actually born and raised there. So again, we're like from two different worlds. Right. And people could not get it in their head, even with us sitting in the same classroom, that what you guys are saying, we would like to know which one of us do you think of when you make that statement? Mm. Oh, well, that's when they would say, well, you're not Black, to the person who self-identifies as Black. And I, looking at her, would have thought she's Black. I mean, my grandma is Afro-Cuban. She self-identifies as Black. So I'm just not getting the disconnect. Why are people not willing to understand that our relationship to race is based in our social history in this country, and it has no tie to logic? It is something we have made up. Mm-hmm. And when are we going to dismantle it? And if we're saying we're evidence-based and we're critical thinkers, then catch up. I mean,
right. Yeah. Yeah. This exposes my own privilege, right? But I feel like I heard that too. And it was this leap, right? Because there's one thing, it's one thing to talk about, okay, you know, lower income communities of color tend to have more food insecurity and tend to have higher rates of disease and like da 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 da, like talk about prevalence and risk and all of that stuff with numbers, right? And then it gets where the bias comes in is analyzing what those numbers are either caused by or result in, and characteristics for an individual based on, you know, population numbers. It doesn't make any sense. And then you're saying, you know, people come in and say, well, it's because, you know, they're stupid and they don't know how to do this. And you're like, well, wait, what? Like, where did that come from? Yeah.
Right. And then that makes me question your capabilities as a budding practitioner. Mm-hmm. If you can't hear how flippant stupid that is, and if you don't understand that correlation and causation are not the same thing, that's like step one in understanding the scientific process. Like, what is wrong with you? Why do you keep making that leap? And how can you not see that nothing happens in a vacuum? Mm-hmm. So I love science and I am all about numbers and research, but you're always going to be influenced by your environment. Mm-hmm. You try to make things as neutral as possible, but you have to be aware of like confounding factors, and you have to be aware of that. And so how can you look at these studies and not question too? I wonder what social assumptions influenced how this study was done. I wonder why we keep looking at one physical characteristic instead of maybe access to food and maybe the effect that stress has on you. Because I see all the time, there is something interesting about being marginalized that will create a strong sense of community mm-hmm. among the people that are othered. Mm-hmm. But it isn't because you actually have that much in common. It's because you're all being subjected to a similar othering. I don't know how else you say that. Mm-hmm. So like me, for example, I was raised so distinctly from the Black Americans around me. Mm-hmm. One, I was kind of sort of raised in a cult. That's another story. And
okay. Yeah.
So that happened. Uh-huh. And so, and then it was also a very white dominated spiritual practice. And so things that were considered culturally not white were also considered negative or maybe worldly just because the default was whiteness. Mm-hmm. So if you did anything that was culturally distinct, instead of people being aware of their own culture and saying, oh, well, there is no such thing as neutral. Everything mm-hmm. probably correlates to how you were raised, and that's okay. We all have more in common than we have different. And why stigmatize something because it seems too ethnic? No, people, that wasn't on their radar. So there are a lot of things that are considered culturally Black American that I never got to participate in. But at the same time, because people looking at you just see another brown little face, no one takes into consideration that you might be an individual. Mm. So I'm still used to maybe, I don't know, what is the right word? Maybe huddling up with other people of color, because you want to go into a safe space. And if you're an introvert or shy person, that's also like a natural thing to do. So maybe on the outside, it looks like, oh, look, they're, you know, I'll ask this one person of color that I know, what do Black people think about this? And their answer surely is an answer that they can make on behalf of hundreds of thousands of people. But that doesn't make any sense. Like, we just have to take that thought process one step further and realize it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And how do you know, looking at someone, whether they have a parent that's American or not American? My mother was not born in the United States. She had one Cuban parent, one Jamaican parent, and everybody self-identifies as Black. And everyone is obviously of African descent. We come in all these different shades, but that's like several different cultural experiences. My grandma had one. Her first language is Spanish. Granddad had a completely different upbringing. And then my mother was born in Haiti. And what does that have to do with anything? I mean, she's an outlier too, you know? Yeah. So to even assume that there's going to be a homogenous experience in one family is silly.
Right.
Even you and your siblings weren't raised by the same parents because your parents keep growing and maturing. And you hear it all the time. The youngest had it so easy. And the oldest says, who are these people who aren't given spankings anymore? So if even in one household, your experience can be so distinct from your blood relative, why would we ever assume that we are being culturally appropriate or culturally conscious by memorizing a list of food preferences based on skin color, which is another thing that I saw in the program when cultural sensitivity class, they're like, oh, remember if you have a client that appears Hindi, okay, how do you appear that? Okay, whatever. We'll just gloss over that. Then they are vegetarian and they are this, that, and whatever. And know that African Americans enjoy soul food and bloody, bloody, blah. Like, are you sure about that? How about we try and be client centered and ask some questions? Because memorizing a list of racial stereotypes is not being culturally sensitive. And for you to frame it that way, it's so sad because somebody out there, probably in the Midwest, I don't know, was trying to do something nice and thought, how can I make all my clients feel welcome? Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll memorize the list of stereotypes. Of course, that's not how it came out in their head, but that's what it ends up being. Just fail. That's all I can say to that. Listen to your clients. Have an interview. Like, they're an individual.
I'm so just like shaken up over that because I hate this. I literally did a project. It was a homework assignment we were required to, and it was this cultural competence workbook. And you had to go through, you were like assigned a culture and you had to create like a menu, right? Based on this cultural competence workbook that was like the gold standard. You know, the academy was like, this is competence. And you're like, okay, sure, sounds good. Oh my gosh.
Well, you know what's funny? Like, I don't want to end up on a list or anything. There are dietitians of color that are in education that are trying to make their voices heard because you can only do so much if you don't ask for input from the people you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is you can be in the room. So I know some people sincerely want to hear from other people. You're a perfect example. You said you wanted to hear from other people. I reached out and you reached back. Mm-hmm. There are other people who say, oh, I'm all about inclusion because it's a buzzword. And you say, hey, how can I participate? How can I help you? How can, you know, I'm all about allies. Let's do this thing. And they're like, no, we're good. We have an old person of not color who's going to do that. Like, don't worry. We got it. We got the workbook. We know all about it.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in the classroom and people are going through a book that talks about African Americans and I'm like, hey, been Black a long time. I have some input. They're like, no, we're good. We got the workbook. You know, like that type of silencing people. I'm like, I understand you read a book about it, but not the same. Mm-mm. It's better than nothing, but it's not as good as I used to hate it when I was in school, client-centered counseling. I don't know why I hated it so much. It just, maybe it was the person who was teaching it. It was all drawn out and it felt really awkward and artificial, like when she would do the reflective listening. And I don't know. I just wasn't into it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was pretty scripted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in theory, it makes sense. Like, just listen to people. Like, don't be a self-absorbed jerk. It's okay to be clueless because everybody is at some point. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with not you. You only know what you know, right? And when you know better, you do better. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think it's more of a betrayal. Maybe betrayal is a little dramatic, but you were a young person mm-hmm. being guided by professionals who are seasoned, who you should have been able to count on. Mm-hmm. Of course you did that assignment and didn't right. see an issue. To me, that's not the young person's fault. That's shame on the people who sold that workbook. You know, like right. they're the ones that should know better by now. And in a lot of cases, they're the ones who are saying, no, we're good. We've read a book about it. When someone tries to say, but I see something problematic there. Mm-hmm. I read something really interesting. I wish I remember, maybe I'll come across the article again. Mm-hmm. But it was an article about how in our country, at some point, we created this very like a false dichotomy when it comes to what is racism. And it's like, to be racist is so offensive to be called racist.
Right.
But we think of racism as only like extreme hate mongering person who's like literally killing people, very ignorant, horrible, horrible type of person. But that isn't the only way that racism shows up. Right. And it's in the air. I have racist and sexist views that don't serve the groups that I belong to because it's in the air. And every now and then you will catch yourself. Like if you go into a doctor's office and you assumed that your doctor would be male, mm-hmm. they had a gender neutral name. Why did you assume that? You know what? That's your bias. It's not your fault. It doesn't make you a bad person. It's in the air. But if you say something weird to that physician that makes her day worse, now you're out of line. You know, right. you need to be self-aware and try and do better about making people feel welcome. And we're so much better off for mm-hmm. it if we do it.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Cause I mean, basically what you're describing is the difference between implicit and explicit biases of like,
right.
having these internalized biases that, cause at the very beginning of this conversation, you said something like, it must suck for people who are racist or da da da. And I was going to ask, like, is anyone not racist who lives in America? Like, I don't know. Is that possible?
I would argue no.
That's what I think too.
Like and maybe like on the planet, I don't know if it's possible because yeah. if you go to other countries, we think we're having a hard time.
yeah.
Oh, other people are doing way worse of the job. Like the concept of saying, hey, we're a majority white country. This is a white country. Like right. it didn't fully click for me until my mom said it, having moved from a country that is majority black. She's like, oh, what do you expect, boo-boo? This is a white country. And I'm like, oh, it is. But in America, I will say, by and large, we really make an effort to evolve and get better as a country. Mm-hmm. And who we consider to be a citizen is always changing. And I do think we're becoming more inclusive. For me to have not noticed that, it actually isn't that weird, because you go to other majority white countries and no one, okay, maybe not no one, but it's very rare mm-hmm. for someone to say, I want to know what's going on with this small percentage of our population that's feeling unwelcome. Mm-hmm. Like, how can I show you more love? And I will say there are a lot of spaces I've gone into in the same city where I was having those lame experiences, mm-hmm. like a yoga retreat. Or, it sounds cheesy, but not that everybody in that space, because, you know, they can be all fat phobic and weird. So anyway, but in, we'll call them woke yoga mm-hmm. communities, mm-hmm. people go above and beyond to make me feel welcome, right. if it's like majority white. And the kind of love that I get, I don't think you get that. Like, where else can you go where you come in and everybody's like, oh my God, make sure she feels welcome. She's
right.
for really for no reason.
Right.
So some days it really sucks and some days it's kind of great. So I can't, yeah. I can't even pretend that I'm on the struggle bus day in and day out. So right. that's a funny thing too. I hear the term privilege so much and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about everybody feeling sorry for me. Like, I'm just another human having a human experience. Some minute things are bad, the next things are good. Mm. Like, it's up and down. I just think everybody just needs to try and be nice, basically.
Right.
Try a little harder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting that you point out, you know, feeling like overly welcome to the point that you're like, okay, we get it, you know, because even that is from a racist, you know, root. Because it's like white guilt coming out and being like, oh my God, can we do anything for you? Like, are you okay?
Right. Okay. And then it's like at the same time, though, I guess it depends on the personality too, because mm-hmm. I hadn't even thought about that. Here I am speaking for everybody that like, right. Oh, that's great. But maybe that's great because I'm a middle child and I didn't get enough attention.
And you're like, give it to me.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, yeah. You want to give me extra cookies? I'll take extra cookies. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with it, but of course that doesn't mean everybody feels that way.
Right. I would say that women at large kind of feel that way right now, that we're like, we'll take extra. Like, what?
I know, right?
Like jobs, more of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I could use some more money. Who doesn't want more money?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's really great that you also emphasized at the end, you know, this is your perspective. You're not, again, and I say this every time I have conversations like this on this podcast, like, you are not the only voice and we need to right. listen to all people and it's okay, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I find this conversation really interesting because this is, I talk about it all the time with weight stigma. I talk about it all the time with, you know, economic disparities and just how this all interplays with health. And it really is important to realize that, you know, being marginalized and stigmatized for whatever reason is going to create this low-grade stress and is going mm-hmm. to cause health issues. And this is not, you know, people always ask me, and I'd love for you to comment on this. People always ask me, you know, how do you know that the health at every size movement is correct? You know, why are doctors wrong? Can doctors be wrong? You know, our medical system is wrong. Like, I don't get it. How can it be biased? It's research. And I'm just sitting there like, oh my, okay.
Yes.
Because this isn't new. So I was hoping you could comment a little on that.
That's really interesting too. And that's where I think in some ways, even though it sucks to be othered, it is beneficial in that it can enhance your critical thinking skills. Mm-hmm. Because when you see everybody around you making assumptions about a group you belong to, and you know it not to be true, and you know more people of color than the people who are stating all these things as though they're fact, it helps you realize just because it's common knowledge doesn't mean it's true. Mm-hmm. And that people take their biases with them everywhere. And it affects everything. Mm-hmm. I know that when I was really, really struggling with symptoms related to Graves' disease, I mm-hmm. couldn't get diagnosed because I kept gaining weight. And all any physician could talk about was how my being fat was causing all these problems. Mm-hmm. And they would not listen to me. So it was like partially probably because I'm female. I don't know how big of a factor race was. It might not have been a factor, but I was confident that women not being believed when they give you a symptom is, I'm sure if I would have come in and been male, I would have gotten diagnosed a lot sooner. Mm. It wasn't until my eyes were like bulging out of my head and my thyroid looked bananas and someone was like, oh, okay, I can see it. Well, now I'm like textbook. It would have been nice if you could have helped me before my hair started falling out. That would have been nice. But I remember someone telling me when I said, I'm waking up with night sweats. And this was at like 25 or 26, mm-hmm. like seriously, the whole bed wet. I'm imagining this is the horror that is menopause. I hope not, but I think it might be. Oh, yeah. But I'm like, I'm just so hot and I just can't get comfortable. It's unbearable. Oh, well, people who are obese often feel more warm than other people. I'm like, I've been fat before and I've never been this hot before. Like, I'm on fire. I could sit in an air-conditioned room and be drenched. And they're like, yeah, sorry, fat girl. That's what it is. So that was multiple physicians. They weren't seeing it. I was crazy because other types of practitioners, like I had multiple ophthalmologists say, I think you should get a thyroid panel. I think you should get a thyroid panel because they kept looking at my eyes and thinking, I think you have Graves' disease, but they wanted to stay in their lane. Good for them. Everybody observe your scope, stay in your scope, right? However, they passed me on to the qualified person and they dropped the ball because they're like, oh, she's fat. That's the problem. When it was the symptom more than anything.
Yeah. Just every time I hear a story like that, which is often, it makes me so angry. And I mean, I can't imagine being in your shoes. It's horrible. And it's happening everywhere. And it's happening kind of no matter what, because I think that, you know, I definitely, in terms of like medical stigma, weight is the big one right now. That's really like getting all of the kind of disregard, I guess, and all of the poor treatment. Mm-hmm. But I know that other marginalizations, stigmatizations. Is that how you say it? Stigmatizations. There we go.
That's okay. Not the word. Yes.
But I know that there are biases wherever you go. And I know that you're going to face certain assumptions and certain things wherever you go. And it's just such a shame that we don't have the training, clearly don't have the training right now to at least try to prevent that or try to address it in a really productive way. And it's exactly what you were saying before in being in school, which is when people who are fat or people who are of color, people who, whatever, try to speak up and say, hey, this doesn't look right. You know, even with credentials, even with a research background, even with whatever, say like, hey, this doesn't look right. They're kind of brushed off of like,
right.
Well, but you don't know. You know,
and like, and the more you're in the group, like if you're medium fat, you can probably talk about health at every size.
Right.
But once you get bigger, oh, nope, you're not allowed. Like nobody wants to hear it anymore. And people silence you. Mm-hmm. It's really, but I will say it should be available in the mainstream, this type of education. Mm-hmm. But people like you and Christy Harrison, you guys are helping people DIY it. And Linda Bacon, like, and I love, have you read her, the other book, the most recent book? Was it
Body Respect?
Yes.
Yeah.
So to me, how intersectional it mm-hmm. is, I mean, she nailed it. And you see us all evolving over time.
Yeah.
I think that down the road, probably people who are 30 years younger than us, they're going to be so much farther along, but I guess it has to start out slow. I'm just glad that people have an opportunity to create their own platform, because if we're just going to wait on people who are already in positions of power to get a clue, it's going to take way too long. And who has that kind of time? Like one of the reasons why I was interested in dietetics was I knew I wasn't exactly clear what area I wanted to be in, but I knew I wanted to make people's lives better. There's just so much stuff you go through in the human experience. Like life is suffering. It sounds very dramatic, but it kind of is. Mm-hmm. Like it's one thing after another. Mm-hmm. And who wants to add to that with unnecessary suffering? So my goal was just to reduce the suffering of others. And there's so many different ways we can do it. And I really feel like this podcast and other podcasts that are in the same vein of making people who have felt like something's not right about the way I'm being treated feel validated. That's huge. Mm-hmm. Like I did a lot of therapy. It's so funny because it sounds so ridiculous to me when I say it out loud that I essentially felt like I needed therapy just to recover from being in a minority group in a country that kept saying, everything's fine. Everything's fine. We're in a post-racial society. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Gosh. Like it's much more clear to everyone recently that it's not post-racial.
Right.
But when I was growing up, everybody kept saying, everything's fine. Mm. And then all of the shows I would watch too, there was no representation. Mm. And you get used to seeing that. And you don't know the damage that it's doing to your psyche to keep seeing that. You're just a child. You have no filter for, you just have no filter for those things. You're just a sponge and you absorb messaging that can be harmful to you. And it's interesting to me, even like with people relating obese to all these poor health outcomes, but not looking at maybe there's a correlation, not a cause and effect relationship. Maybe it's all the poor treatment that's leading to these outcomes. People don't see it in other areas too. So like when, for example, those professors that kept saying, oh, the Black community is just so fat and so this and so that and so whatever, could stress be a factor? Could that be it? Could it have nothing to do with the skin color, but the experience? Mm-hmm. Could like, and then it's interesting to me sometimes to hear people in the body positive space not make that click. That's why I'm all over Linda Bacon for like, and then knowing too that she's in a different generation from us, I'm just very impressed. This is what smart people can do, you know? Like anybody should be able to get a clue. It doesn't have to have anything to do with how you were raised or where you were raised or how clueless you were at one time.
Right. Yeah. You could have been raised in like with the most, you know, hateful attitudes and all it takes is some critical thinking and some, you know, setting aside your ego. And I think that's, you know, you were talking about that before. It's the worst thing in the world to be called racist, even though, like we said, I mean, you and I both believe that it's not possible to not be racist, like that implicit or explicit, you know. I think explicit is the thing that we can really work on. And the implicit, I believe, takes time and is a reflection of our explicit actions. But I also think that there are just some things that are so deep that it's going to be like, while we're living in a culture that reinforces it, you know, we can only do so much. It takes time.
So, and then you just have to constantly, like you said, it's an inside job. I know not everybody is that way though. Some people just aren't very self-aware. So I understand that the idea of having to be self-aware sounds like more of a drag to some people than others. Some people are all about the self-improvement, but other people, I know it sounds like a chore to them and they're like, I have enough problems, but just think about someone aside from yourself for once. And that's one of the keys to happiness, is not being super self-absorbed. So if you think about it that way, that in an effort to help your fellow countrymen, you're actually helping yourself, then it's kind of selfish. So do it.
Hey, any way you get there, we'll take it. Yeah. One thing that I did want to comment on too, that I thought was really interesting about what you said about shows, like being a sponge for these shows that we watch. I don't know. Are you familiar with the show Big Brother?
Yes.
Okay. So last night was the finale and I've been watching the show for years and it's always been a boys club. It's always been very like the old people and the people of color get kind of picked off really quick. And then it's like all the like white bros and jocks and like cool kids club by the end. And you're like, all right, we get it, you know? And so when an underdog wins or when someone who's like, you know, kind of hiding in the shadows wins, it's this big deal. And this season, something happened that was like very much implicit biases being played out, which is the cool guy who ended up winning. He essentially was responsible for the three people of color in the house to be removed first. Like they were evicted first, kind of in sequential order. And it was hard to watch. And the entire internet was like, what is happening? And last night, right before he was crowned as, or like announced as the winner, they got to confront him about it and be like, we don't think it was intentional. Like, I don't think you were trying to be racist, but it was biased. And I hope you watch it back and like improve yourself.
Wow.
It was wild because he came out when he won and his face was just like dead. Like he looked so shaken up and Twitter just blew up. And I was like, this is exactly what needs to be happening on these large shows that are being watched all over the country is it's going to be awkward, but like,
Then you have to question, like, if you really think it through, what's more important, your precious little feelings or all these other people's emotional well-being? Like, which is it? And then if even after you think that through, you're like, well, my feelings are more important. And that's some imperialistic nonsense. You've got issues, right? Like, if you can think that through, you're like, my feelings are more important. Then,
Then that's
it. Yeah, that's a problem. So I've been trying more and more to let other people's racism be their problem and work on the areas where I'm experiencing privilege and being clueless. Because there's a lot of homophobia in the Black community, Black American community. I won't speak for places where I don't live. And that's another thing. Like, if you get to pass as straight, even if you're not, have you really thought about how your other friends are going through life as openly LGBTQ people? And is there anything that you're doing to make people in your environment who maybe aren't out to you feel worse about their life? Are you adding to anyone else's suffering? Let's just try and reduce the suffering.
Yeah. And you can only reduce it going forward. So it's not helpful to sit there and, you know, berate yourself or feel so horribly guilty about the past, although a little guilt is necessary. But, you know, not to sit there and want to hide and want to be like, I'm never talking to anyone again and give up and quit and run away, because that's not helpful either. That's just avoiding it and, again, turning yourself kind of into the victim. it's about humble acknowledgement of like, yeah, I did that. I contributed to it. I've, you know, it's all I knew and now I know better and let's do better going forward.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah. And I think it's really hard for women to deal with the shame or feeling completely shut down when you realize you made a mistake, because we're not allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. And realizing you're not perfect and you're not super friendly and all the nice things we're supposed to, that you're not all nice, right?
Right.
That's really difficult to swallow. But then question that too. Where'd you get that from? Who said you could make mistakes? Who said you had to be perfect? You're human. And who said you had to feel shame every time you made a mistake? How does it serve you to feel all that shame?
Exactly.
And if you're afraid that everyone's going to abandon you and you're going to be kicked out of the tribe because you made a mistake, let's think rationally about this. No one is going to throw you away because you made a mistake. Even your friends of color that, you know, that maybe are like, yeah, I really love her, but man, when she said this and she said that, it really made me feel like trash. Mm-hmm. And they come to you and tell you because they love you and they care about the relationship enough to have that awkward conversation, because it is freaking awkward.
Yeah.
Then getting all upset and crying and shutting the person down. Come on. That's not the correct response.
Not the way. Yeah. And for those listening, the correct response is to be like, oh, wow, I hear you. And either how can I do better, or I will do better, or whatever, you know? Being open to the conversation, that ego flare up, that anxiety of like, I did something wrong. Just, take a deep breath. It's going to be okay. And hear the person out. You know, it's not this thing. You're not being like put on trial.
It's right. Just, right.
You're just being told how someone else feels as a result of your actions. So do better.
Yeah. Take the focus off yourself and think about how hard it was for them to bring that to you.
Right.
Because it's difficult to be vulnerable. Like, it's easy to have a fight, but it's hard to admit, like, you hurt me. If someone says you offended me, they're also saying you hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
Hear that. How do you really feel about that when someone says, I care about you, I trust you, and you hurt me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how mad can you really get at that?
Right. I think that's good. I hope that this will be helpful for someone in the future who is maybe in this situation or whatever. But do you have anything else, any kind of tips or thoughts that you didn't get to say that you want to kind of wrap up with?
I just want everybody to be kind to themselves and try and be kind to others. Because I really think when we look at intersectionality, it's all connected. And people who are hurt tend to hurt other people. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult for you to learn to be more loving when you don't accept yourself even. And how could you get to the point where you are able to reject other cultural biases if you can't even accept that your larger body is okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what hope do you really have? Like, if you can't opt out of that foolishness, and you're experiencing it directly with whatever little bit of privilege you do have, you just have to shut it all down. Think critically, question everything, and be nice.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. I think that can be one of the most powerful motivators to starting to love yourself is like, oh, I don't want to buy into these narratives anymore. I don't want to be a part of that system that created this self-hatred in the first place.
Right.
And yeah, I think that's a really, really great advice. So thank you for that. Where can people, I know you have a podcast, right?
Yes. So I launched a podcast about a month ago. Mm-hmm. It's called School Nutrition Dietitian. And when I came up with that name, I forgot that people can't spell dietitian, but on social media, I'm School Nutrition RD, because everyone can handle that. So I'm on Instagram and Facebook. And I'm really trying to use that platform to do a lot of professional development for people who work in school nutrition, but also to break down some body negativity and, you know, foolishness that we're feeding babies. Like, if we are doing nutrition ed with children and we buy into all of this, well, you know, basically everything that you talk about all the time, diet culture has no place in an evidence-based nutrition education setting, and yet it's there so often. And I really want to help people stop bringing that foolishness in to the classroom. And I think that since the school nutrition program has contact with like 30 million kids, it's something insane. It's a very high number of children in the US. If we have a bunch of people running around who have bought into diet culture, talking to our babies, that's a problem. So yeah. I am weaving that in between other episodes that deal with things like purchasing guidelines and things that have nothing to do with it. So I'm not strictly marketing it that way, but I'm getting in there.
It's very needed. Yeah. Cause that's a whole, I agree. We need to be going for educating in the correct way.
Right.
Our kids, like the newest generation, because they're going to be able to impact the most change,
right?
Always. And if we're, you know, projecting all of our body ideals and bullshit onto them, then
it's not
looking good. So I'm glad you're doing it. Really glad about it.
I'm just so inspired by everybody who is, I'm just happy to see dietitians having more of a voice.
Oh, me too.
Everywhere. Yeah.
It's awesome. It is so awesome to see. Well, thank you so much, Dahlia. I really appreciate you coming on. I will link everything below and we will talk soon.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
If you are loving the Trust Your Body Project podcast and are ready to dive headfirst into your healing transformation, head on over to whitneycatalano.com/food-freedom to learn more about working with me. whitneycatalano.com/food-freedom.